Not to worry, Doc. I gave this kid my word. His mother is never going to hurt him again. From that moment on, I knew I was safe. Standing near the officer, I wanted to hug his leg, but I knew I shouldn't. My eyes gleamed with joy. The police officer became my hero. A few minutes after we left the hospital, he slowed his car as he drove through the hills on the narrow one-lane roads. I rolled down my window and stared in amazement at the sloping brown hills and tall redwood trees. Moments later, the officer parked the car. "Well, David, here we are." I gazed down below me at the prettiest home I had ever seen. The officer explained that I would live here for a while, and that this would be my new foster home. I had never heard the words, foster home, before, but I knew I would love the home. To me it seemed like a giant log cabin with lots of open windows. I could see that behind the home was a huge backyard, where sounds of screeching and laughter echoed by the tiny creek. The elderly woman who ran the temporary foster home introduced herself as Aunt Mary, and greeted me at the kitchen door. I thanked the police officer with the strongest handshake I could. I felt bad that he had worked overtime for me. He knelt down and said in a deep voice, "David, it's kids like you that made me want to become a policeman." Without thinking, I grabbed his neck. The moment I did, my arms felt as if they were on fire. I didn't care. "Thank you, sir." "Hey, kid, not a problem," he replied. He then strolled up the curved walkway and saluted me from his car before driving off. I didn't even know his name. After Aunt Mary fed me a delicious dinner of filet of sole, she introduced me to the 7 other children who, like myself, for one reason or another, no longer lived with their parents. I stared into every one of their faces. Some eyes were hollow, some full of worry, others full of confusion. I had no idea there were other unwanted children, too. For years I had felt I was all alone. At first I acted shy, but after a few questions from the other children I opened up. "What are you in for?" they asked. "What happened to you?" I bent my head down before replying that my mother didn't like me because I was always in trouble. I felt ashamed. I didn't want to tell them the secret about mother and me, but none of that mattered to any of them, for I was just another face in the crowd. I was instantly accepted. I felt a surge of energy erupt from inside. From that moment on, I became a wild child. I blitzed through the home as if my pants were on fire. I joked, laughed, and screamed with joy, releasing years of solitude and silence. I was uncontrollable. I ran from room to room, jumping on every mattress in the home. I bounced so high my head banged again and again against the ceiling. I didn't stop until I saw stars. I didn't care. The other children clapped their hands, egging me on. Their laughs weren't cold like the snide remarks reserved for me back at school, but were full of delight and approval. My frolicking ended suddenly when I ran through the living room, nearly knocking over a lamp. By reflex, Aunt Mary grabbed my arm. She was about to scold me until she looked down at me. I covered my face, and my knees began to shake. Aunt Mary was a strict, elderly woman who stood her ground, but she didn't yell as she was known to do. For that evening, my hyperactivity ended as quickly as air could escape a balloon. Aunt Mary released her grip and knelt down, asking, "What did she do to you?" "I'm sorry," I stuttered in a low voice. I was still unsure of Aunt Mary's intentions. I retreated into my protective position. "I was a bad boy, and I deserved what I got." Later that evening, Aunt Mary tucked me into bed. I began to cry. explaining to her that I was afraid Mother would come and take me away. She assured me I was safe and stayed with me until I felt secure. I stared up at the dark cedar ceiling. It reminded me of the old cabin in Guerneville. I fell asleep knowing that Mother was out there somewhere waiting to get me. Alone in my dreams, I found myself standing at the end of a long, dark hallway. A shadowy figure emerged at the opposite end. The figure transformed into the Mother. She began to march toward me. For some reason, I stood still. I couldn't move. I didn't even try. The closer the Mother came, the more her red face filled with hatred came into focus. The Mother held a shiny knife above her, poised and ready to strike me down. I turned and ran down the endless hallway. With all my strength, I pumped my legs as fast as I could, searching for a light. I ran forever. The hallway twisted and turned as I hunted for an escape. I could feel the Mother's rancid breath on my neck and hear her cold voice chanting that there was no escape and that she would never let me go. I snapped out of my dream. My face and chest were covered with a cold, sticky sweat. Not knowing if I was still dreaming, I covered my face. After my breathing began to slow down, I frantically looked all around. I was still in the cedar room. I still had on a pair of pajamas that Aunt Mary had loaned me. I patted myself, feeling for any wounds. "A dream," I told myself. "A bad dream, that's all." I tried to control my breathing, but couldn't shake the vision. The Mother's words echoed in my mind, "I will never let go of you, never." I jumped out of bed and scrambled around in the darkness to throw on my clothes. I returned to the head of the bed and held my knees close to my chest. I couldn't go back to sleep. That's where the Mother now lived, in my dreams. I felt it was a mistake that I was taken away, and I knew I would soon be returned to her. That night, and those to follow while everyone slept, I held on to my knees as I rocked back and forth, humming to myself. I would stare through the window and listen to the trees sway in the evening breeze. I told myself that I would never fall into the nightmare again. My first encounter with the county's Child Protective Service Agency came in the form of an angel named Ms. Gold. Her long, shiny blonde hair and bright face matched her name. "Hi," she smiled. "I'm your social worker." And so began the long and drawn-out sessions in which I had to explain things I didn't totally understand. In the beginning of our first session, I huddled at the far end of the couch while Ms. Gold sat at the other end. Without my knowing, she slowly inched her way toward me until she was close enough to hold my hand. At first, I was too scared to have her touch me. I didn't deserve her kindness. But Ms. Gold held on to my hand, caressing my palm, assuring me that she was there to help me. That day, she stayed with me for over 5 hours. The other visits were just as long. At times I was too scared to talk, and long moments of silence followed. Other times, for no apparent reason and not understanding why, I burst into tears. Ms. Gold didn't care. She simply held me tight and rocked me back and forth, whispering in my ear that everything was going to be all right. Sometimes we would lie at the end of the couch, and I would talk about things that were of no relation to my bad past. During those times, I would play with the long strands of Ms. Gold's shiny hair. I'd lie in her arms and breathe in the fragrance of her flowery perfume. I soon began to trust Ms. Gold. She became my best friend. After school, whenever I saw her car, I'd sprint down the walkway and burst into Aunt Mary's home, knowing Ms. Gold had come to see me. We always ended our sessions with a long hug. She would then bend down and assure me that I didn't deserve to be treated the way I was, and that what my mother did to me was not my fault. I had heard Ms. Gold's words before, but after years of brainwashing, I wasn't so sure. So much had happened so fast. One time I asked Ms. Gold why she needed all of this information on Mother and me. To my horror, she told me that the county was going to use it against my mother. "No," I pleaded. "She must never know. I told you, never." Ms. Gold assured me that I was doing the right thing. But when she left me alone to think, I came to a different conclusion. As long as I could remember, I had always been in trouble. I was always being punished for one thing or another. Whenever my parents had fought, my name was always thrown into the ring. Was it really Mother's fault? Maybe I deserved everything I got over the years. I did lie and steal food, and I knew I was the reason why Mother and Father no longer lived together. Would the county throw Mother in jail? Then what would happen to my brothers? That day, after Ms. Gold left, I sat alone on the couch. My mind raced with questions. I felt my insides turn to jelly. My God, what have I done? Days later, on a Sunday afternoon, while I was outside learning to play basketball, I heard the old familiar sound of Mother's station wagon. My heart felt as though it stopped beating. I closed my eyes, thinking I was daydreaming. When my brain responded, I turned and ran inside Aunt Mary's home and smashed into her. It's my... I stuttered. "Yes, I know," Aunt Mary gently spoke as she held me. "You're going to be all right." "No! You don't under... She's going to take me away! She found me!" I yelled. I tried to squirm myself away from Aunt Mary's grip so I could run outside and find a safe place to hide. Aunt Mary's grip didn't budge. "I didn't want to upset you," Aunt Mary said. "She's just going to drop off some clothes. You're going to court this Wednesday, and your mother wants you to look nice." "No!" I cried. "She's going to take me! She's going to take me back!" "David, be still. I'll be right here if you need me. Now please, be still, young man." Aunt Mary did her best to calm me down, but my eyes nearly popped out as I watched the mother stroll down the walkway with her four boys in tow. I sat by Aunt Mary's side. Greetings were exchanged, and like a trained dog I became my old self, the child called It. In an instant, I went from an enthusiastic boy to Mother's invisible house slave. Mother didn't even acknowledge my presence. Instead, she turned to Aunt Mary. "So, tell me, how is the boy?" I looked up at Aunt Mary's face. She seemed startled. Her eyes flickered for just a second. "David? David is quite fine, thank you. He's right here, you know," Aunt Mary responded, holding me a little tighter. "Yes," Mother said in a dry voice. "I can see that." I could feel Mother's hate burn through me. "And how does he get along with the other children?" Aunt Mary cocked her head to one side. "Quite fine. David is very polite and extremely helpful around the home. He's always looking to help out," she answered, knowing that Mother had no intention of talking to me directly. "Well, you should be careful," Mother warned. "He's tried to hurt other children. He doesn't get along well with others. The boy is violent. He needs special attention, discipline that only I know how to instill. You don't know the boy." I could feel the muscles on Aunt Mary's arm become tight as a drum. She leaned forward, giving Mother her best smile, the kind of smile that Aunt Mary would like to slap Mother silly with. "David is a fine young man. David may be a bit rambunctious, but that's to be expected considering what David's been put through. Suddenly I realized what was happening. Mother was trying to gain control over Aunt Mary, and Mother was losing. On the outside, my shoulders slumped forward, and I gave Mother my timid puppy-dog look as I stared down at the carpet. But on the inside, my ears became like radar, picking up every phrase, every syllable of the conversation. "Finally," I said to myself, "someone has finally put Mother in her place. Yes!" The more I heard Aunt Mary's tone change toward Mother, the more my face lit up. I was enjoying this. I slowly lifted my head up. I looked right into Mother's eyes. Inside, I smiled. "Well, isn't this nice? It's about time," I said to myself. As I listened to them, my head began to weave from left to right, then back again, as if I were watching a tennis match. Aunt Mary tried again to have Mother acknowledge me. I nodded my head at Mother as I openly agreed with Aunt Mary. I began to feel extremely confident. "I am someone. I am somebody," I told myself. I could feel parts of my body begin to relax. I was no longer scared. For once, everything was fine right up until the moment I heard the phone ring. My head snapped to the right as the kitchen phone shrilled. I counted the rings, hoping someone would hang up. I became tense after the 12th ring. Aunt Mary turned toward the kitchen. I grabbed her arm. "Come on," I said to myself. "No one's home. Just hang up." But the phone kept ringing 16, 17, 18 times. "Just hang up. Just hang up." I could feel Aunt Mary lean forward to get up. I kept my hand on her arm, trying to force her to stay. When she stood up, I followed. My right hand clamped onto her left arm. She stopped mid-stride and pried my hand off finger by finger. "David, please, it's just the phone. For goodness sake, don't be rude. Now go back in there." I stood still. I locked onto Aunt Mary's eyes for a brief moment. Aunt Mary understood. She nodded her head. "Okay," she said in a low voice. "Come on, you can stay with me." I let out a sigh of relief as I followed her feet to the kitchen. Suddenly, I felt my left arm being yanked backwards. I nearly lost my footing. I fought to regain my balance. I closed my eyes as I bit my lip. My legs began to shake. Inches in front of me sat Mother. Her heavy, raspy breathing made me quiver. Mother's face was dark red. I could tell that from behind her glasses her eyes were on fire. I tried to search for my savior, but Aunt Mary had already turned into the kitchen. I stared down at the carpet, wishing her away. Mother squeezed my arm tighter. "Look at me," she hissed. I became frozen. I wanted to yell, but my voice became mute. Her evil eyes locked onto mine. I closed my eyes as I felt Mother's head inch its way toward my face. Mother's monotone voice became vicious. "Cocky little bastard, aren't you? Well, you don't look so tall now, do you? What's the matter? Has your little Aunt Mary left you?" she said in a sarcastic, whining voice. Mother then yanked me so close to her face that I could smell her breath and feel droplets of saliva spray on my face. Mother's voice turned ice cold. "Do you know what in the hell you've done? Do you? The questions they've asked me? Do you realize the embarrassment you've cost this family?" Mother asked as she spread her left hand at my brother sitting beside her. My knees began to buckle. I wanted to go to the bathroom and throw up. Mother smiled, showing me her dark yellow teeth. "They think I tried to hurt you. Now why would I do that?" I tried to turn my head toward the kitchen. I could barely make out Aunt Mary's voice on the phone. "Child," Mother hissed. "Boy, get this straight. I don't care what they say. I don't care what they do. You're not out of this yet. I'll get you back. You hear me? I'll get you back. When she heard Aunt Mary hang up the phone, Mother released my arm and pushed me away. I sat back in the wide chair and watched my savior stroll back into the living room and sit down beside me. I'm sorry about that, Aunt Mary said. Mother batted her eyes and waved her hand. Suddenly she became regal. The act was on. That? Oh, the phone, no problem. I have to, we have to get going anyway. I stole a glance at my brothers. Their eyes were hard and fixed. I gazed at them, wondering what they thought of me. Except for Kevin, who was still a toddler, the three of them seemed as if they wanted to throw me outside and stomp on me. I knew they hated me, and I felt I deserved it, for I had exposed the family secret. I tried to imagine what it must be like for them to live with Mother now. I prayed that somehow my brothers would forgive me. I felt like a deserter. I also prayed that the cycle of hate had not moved on to one of them. I felt sorry for them. They had to live in total hell. After another round of pleasantries and final warnings from Mother to Aunt Mary, the family departed. As I heard the sound of Mother's tires from her station wagon mash down on the rocks as she drove away, I remained glued to the chair. I sat in the living room for the rest of the afternoon, rocking back and forth, repeating Mother's pledge over and over again. I'll get you back. I'll get you back. That evening I couldn't eat. In bed I rolled back and forth until I sat up clutching my knees. The mother was right. I knew in my heart she would get me back. I stared out the window of my room. I could hear the wind howl through the tops of trees and the branches rub against each other. My chest began to tighten. I cried. I knew at that moment there was no escape for me. At school the next day, I couldn't concentrate on my work. I strolled around the schoolyard like a zombie. Later that afternoon, I met Ms. Gold at Aunt Mary's home. David, we're going to court in 2 days. I need to ask you just a few questions to clarify our case, okay, honey? She asked with a bright smile. I refused to speak and sat rigidly at the far end of the couch. I couldn't look at Ms. Gold. To her dismay, I muttered, I don't think I should say anything. Miss Gold's mouth nearly fell to the carpet. She began to speak, but I raised my hand, cutting her off. I then retracted as many statements as I could, claiming that I had lied about everything. I had caused all of the household problems. I told her that I had fallen down the stairs. I had run into doorknobs. I had beaten myself. I had stabbed myself. I then cried to Ms. Gold that my mommy was a beautiful, kind woman with the perfect flower garden, the perfect home, the perfect family, and that I craved her attention because of my other brothers. And everything was all my fault. Ms. Gold became speechless. She scooted over to where I sat. She tried several times to reach out and hold my hand. I brushed her delicate fingers away. She became so frustrated that she began to cry. After several hours and many attempts, Ms. Gold looked at me with dried streaks of tears and blotches of black eyeliner running down her face. "David, honey," she sniffled, "I don't understand. Why won't you talk to me, please, honey?" Then she tried to switch tactics. She stood up and pointed her finger at me. "Don't you know how important this case is? Don't you know that all I talk about in my office is a cute little boy who is brave enough to tell me his secret?" I looked through Ms. Gold and tuned her out. "I don't think I should say anything else," I coldly replied. Ms. Gold bent over, trying to force me to look into her face. "David, please," she begged. But to me, she just wasn't there. I knew that my social worker was trying everything in her power to help me, but I feared Mother's wrath more than Ms. Gold's. From the moment Mother stated, "I'll get you back," I knew everything in my new world was lost. Ms. Gold reached out to hold my hand. I slapped her fingers away. I turned my back to her. "David James Pelzer," she barked. "Do you have any idea what you're saying? Do you understand what you're doing? You had better get your story straight. You're going to have to make a major decision pretty soon, and you better be ready for it." Ms. Gold sat back down, wedging me between her knees and the end of the couch. "David, you have to understand that in a person's life there are a few precious moments in which decisions, choices that you make now, will affect you for the rest of your life. I can help you, but only if you let me. Do you understand?" I again turned away. Suddenly Ms. Gold sprang up from the couch. Her face became bright red and her hands were shaking. I tried to hold back my feelings, but a surge of anger erupted. "No!" I cried out. "Don't you get it? Don't you understand? She'll get me back. She'll win. She always wins. No one can stop the Mother. Not you, not anyone. She'll get me back." Her face went blank. "Oh, my God," Ms. Gold exclaimed as she bent down to hold me. "Is that what she said to you? David, honey." Her arms stretched out to embrace me. "No," I yelled. "Won't you just leave me alone? Just go away." Ms. Gold stood over me for a few moments, then turned on her heels and stormed out of the room. A few seconds later, I could hear the sound of the screen door slamming in the kitchen. Without thinking, I ran into the kitchen, but I stood frozen behind the door. Through the screen, I could see Ms. Gold stumbling up the steep walkway. She lost her grip on her papers and tried to catch some of them in midair. "Shit!" she cried out. The papers scattered as she desperately tried to gather them into one pile. As soon as she stood up, she fell down, scraping her right knee. I could see the frustration on her face as she clamped her hand over her mouth. Ms. Gold tried again to stand up, but this time with more caution as she made her way to the county car. She slammed the car door shut and bent her head against the steering wheel. As I stood behind the screen door, I could hear Ms. Gold, my angel, sobbing uncontrollably. After several minutes, she finally started her car and sped off. I stayed behind the kitchen screen and cried inside. I knew I could never forgive myself, but lying to Ms. Gold was the lesser of two evils. I stood alone, confused, behind the screen door. I felt that by lying I had protected Mother, that I had done the right thing. I knew Mother was going to get me back, and no one could stop her. But when I thought of how kind Ms. Gold had been throughout everything, I suddenly realized the terrible position I had just put her in. I never meant to hurt anybody, especially Ms. Gold. I became a statue as I stood behind the screen door. I only wished that I could crawl under a rock and hide. Forever. Chapter 3 The Trial. 2 days later, Ms. Gold drove me to the county courthouse. The ride began in total silence. I sat on the far side by the door, staring at the scenery. We drove north on Highway 280 beside the aqueduct, the same water reserve the family used to drive by on our way to Memorial Park years ago. Ms. Gold finally broke the ice, explaining in a soft voice that today the judge would decide whether I was to become a permanent ward of the court, or be returned to my mother's custody. I didn't understand the ward of the court part, but I knew what returning to my mother's custody meant. I shivered at this last part of Ms. Gold's sentence. I looked up at her, wondering whether I would be riding back with Ms. Gold after court or in the back of Mother's station wagon. I asked Ms. Gold whether there was a possibility of Mother taking me back with her today. Ms. Gold reached out, patted my hand, and nodded, "Yes." My head slumped forward. I didn't have the energy to resist anymore. I hadn't been able to sleep since our last meeting. The closer Ms. Gold drove to the courthouse, the more I could feel myself slipping from her safety and back into Mother's clutches. My hands formed into a tight fist. The countdown now began. I felt a soft caress on my left hand. My arms flew up to protect my face. It took a moment for me to realize that I was only daydreaming. I took a deep breath and nodded to myself, trying to calm myself down. "David," Ms. Gold began, "listen to me very carefully. This is Pam talking, not Ms. Gold, your social worker. Do you understand?" I let out a deep sigh. I knew we were only a few miles away from the courthouse. "Yes, ma'am, I understand." "David, what your mother did to you was wrong, very wrong. No child deserves to be treated like that. She's sick." Pam's voice was soft and calm. She seemed on the verge of tears. "Remember Monday afternoon when I told you that one day you'd have to make a decision? Well, today is that day. The decision you make today will affect you for the rest of your life. Only you can decide your fate. I've done all that I can do. Everyone's done what they can do. Your teachers, the school nurse, Aunt Mary, everyone. Now, it's up to you." "David, I see so much in you. You're a very brave young man. Not many children can tell their secret. Someday this whole experience will be behind you." Ms. Gold stopped for a moment. "David, you're a very brave young man." "Well, I don't feel very brave, Ms. Gold. I feel like a traitor." "David," Pam smiled, "you're not a traitor, and don't you forget it." "If she's sick," I asked, "then what about my other brothers? Are you going to help them too? What if she goes after one of them?" "Well, right now, my only concern is you. I don't have any information that your mother was or is abusing your brothers. We have to start somewhere. Let's take this one step at a time, all right?" "And David," Ms. Gold switched off the ignition. We had reached the courthouse. "Yes, ma'am?" "I want you to know that I love you." I looked deep into Ms. Gold's eyes. They were so pure. "I really do," she said, stroking the side of my cheek. I cried as I nodded my head. Ms. Gold lifted my chin with her fingers. I pressed my head against her hand. I cried because I knew that in a few minutes I would betray Pam's love. Minutes later, we walked into the waiting room of the county courthouse, and Ms. Gold grabbed my hand. Mother and the boys were waiting on one of the benches. Ms. Gold nodded at Mother as the two of us walked by. I stole a glance. Mother was wearing a nice dress and had fixed up her hair. Ron had a cast on his leg. No one acknowledged my presence, but I could feel Mother's hate. Ms. Gold and I sat down waiting our turn. The delay was unbearable. Burying my head under my right arm, I mumbled to Ms. Gold, asking her for a pen and paper. I proceeded to scribble a small note. "To Mother, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean for it to come to this. I didn't mean to tell the secret. I didn't mean to hurt the family. Can you ever forgive me? Your son, David." Ms. Gold read the note and nodded, giving me permission to give the note to Mother. I shuffled over to Mother, becoming a child called It once again, with my hands stuck to my side and my head cocked down toward the floor. I waited for Mother to say something, to yell at me, snap her fingers, anything. She didn't even acknowledge my presence. I inched my head upward, moving my eyes up her body, and stuck my hand out, holding my note. Mother snatched the paper, read it, then tore it in half. I bowed my head before returning to Ms. Gold, who put her arm around my shoulder. Minutes later, Ms. Gold, Mother, my four brothers, and I filed into the courtroom. I sat behind a dark table, gazing in awe at the man above me dressed in a black robe. "Don't be afraid," Ms. Gold whispered. "The judge may ask you a few questions. It's important, very important, that you tell him the truth," she said, stressing the last part of her sentence. Knowing that my final outcome would be decided in the next few minutes, I reached over and nervously tapped Ms. Gold's hand. "I'm sorry for all the trouble I caused you. I wanted to tell her the truth, the real truth, but I didn't have the guts." The lack of sleep had drained all of my inner strength. Ms. Gold smiled at me reassuringly, revealing her pearly white teeth. A subtle yet familiar fragrance filled my head. I closed my eyes, taking in a deep breath. Before I knew it, the clerk began to read off a number and stated my name. At the mention of my name, my head snapped up at the judge, who adjusted his glasses and glanced down at me.
"Yes, the, Peltzer case. Yes, I presume the representative from the county is present?" the judge asked. Ms. Gold cleared her throat and winked at me. "Here we go. Wish me luck." The judge nodded at Ms. Gold. "Recommendations?"
"Thank you, Your Honor. As the court is well aware through the extensive briefs from the pediatrician's examinations, interviews with the minor's former teachers, other interviews, and my reports, the county recommends that David Peltzer become a permanent ward of the court." I stared up at Ms. Gold. I could barely make out her voice. I knew it was she who was talking, but her voice cracked. I glanced down at her skirt. Her knees were shaking. I clamped my eyes shut. "Oh, my God," I said to myself. As I opened my eyes, Ms. Gold returned to her seat, covering her trembling hands.
"Mrs. Peltzer, is there anything you wish to state?" the judge asked.
Every head swung to the right, stopping at Mother. At first I thought Mother didn't hear the judge. She simply stared up at his bench with a blank expression. After a few seconds, I realized what Mother was trying to do. She was trying to stare the judge down.
Mrs. Peltzer, do you wish to make a statement in regard to your son, David?"
"I have nothing to say," Mother said in a flat tone. The judge rubbed his forehead, then shook his head.
"Fine. Thank you, Mrs. Peltzer, duly noted."
The judge then turned to Ms. Gold.
"This is a very disturbing, very unusual case. I have read thoroughly all of the statements, and I have been troubled with the..." I lost track of time as the judge began to ramble. I felt myself shrinking inside. I knew in a matter of minutes the proceedings would be over, and I would be back with Mother. I glanced over to the right to look at her. Mother's face was stone cold. I closed my eyes, visualizing myself back at the bottom of the stairs and sitting on top of my hands, hungry like a starving animal. I didn't know whether I could go back to that life again. I only wanted to be free of the pain and the indignity.
"David," Ms. Gold whispered as she poked me. "David, the judge wants you to stand up." I shook my thoughts clear. I had fallen asleep. Again. "What? I don't understand." Ms. Gold grabbed my elbow. "Come on, David, the judge is waiting." I stared up at the judge, who nodded for me to stand. My throat felt as if an apple were stuck in it. As I pushed my chair behind me, Ms. Gold tapped my left hand. "It's all right. Just tell the judge the truth.
"Well, young man," the judge began, "what it boils down to is this. If the court so desires, and if you believe that your home setting is undesirable, you may become a permanent ward of the court, or you may return and reside with your mother at your home residence." My eyes grew wide. I couldn't believe that this moment had finally come. In unison, every person in the small room turned toward me. A lady with grayish-white hair held her fingers just above a strange-looking typewriter. Every time someone spoke, the lady tapped keys that looked like tongue depressors. I swallowed hard and clenched my hands. From the right, I could feel Mother's radar of hate turn on. I tried to look at the judge. I swallowed hard once more before I started to deliver my rehearsed line about how I had lied, and that I had indeed caused all the problems at home, and that Mother had never abused me. From the corner of my right eye, I could see Mother's eyes locked onto me. Time stood still. I closed my eyes and imagined myself being driven back to the house with the mother, where she would beat me and I would be forced to live at the bottom of the stairs, dreading the second set of commercials, wishing I could someday escape and become a normal kid who was allowed to be free of fear, to play outside. Without Ms. Gold knowing, I turned to her and inhaled again. Suddenly, it hit me. Ms. Gold's perfume. It was the same perfume she wore whenever she gave me a hug or held me as we lay at the end of the couch. I saw myself playing with her hair. My mind switched to seeing myself outside, laughing with the other children, playing basketball, searching for each other in a game of tag, and running at hypersonic speeds through Aunt Mary's home. Then at the end of the day being dragged in from outside after hunting for snakes or playing by the creek. I opened my eyes and peeked at my hands. They were no longer red. In fact, my skin had a light tan. I could feel Mother's radar drill through me. I felt myself leaning to the right, a surge of fear creeping up my back. I took in another whiff of Ms. Gold's perfume. I held my breath for a fleeting second. Then, before my courage disappeared, I blurted out, "You, sir! I want to live with you. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to tell. I didn't mean to cause any trouble." Mother's radar of hate intensified. I tried to remain standing, but my knees began to buckle.
"So be it," the judge quickly announced. "It is the recommendation of this court that the minor David James Peltzer shall become a ward of the court and remain so until his 18th birthday. This case is closed," the judge quickly concluded as he slammed his gavel on a piece of wood. I felt paralyzed. I wasn't sure what had just happened. Ms. Gold sprang up and hugged me so tightly that I thought she'd crush my ribs. All I could see was a forest of blonde strands, and I gagged as I almost swallowed clumps of Ms. Gold's hair. After a few moments, Ms. Gold regained her composure. I wiped my tears in my runny nose. I looked up at the bench. The judge smiled at me. I returned the gesture. Then, for a brief moment, I thought His Honor winked at me. I felt Mother's radar of hate flicker, then turn off. Ms. Gold held my shoulders. "David, I'm so proud of you." Before she could say anything else, I whimpered, "I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to lie to you the other day. I'm sorry I made you cry. Can you ever forgive me? I just wanted to..." Ms. Gold parted my hair from my eyes.
"Shh. It's all right. I knew what you were doing. But now your mother wants to..."
"No," I cried. "She'll take me away."
"She only wants to say goodbye," Ms. Gold assured me. As Ms. Gold and I slowly made our way out of the courtroom, I could see ahead of us that Mother was crying too. Ms. Gold nudged me forward. I hesitated until I felt sure that Ms. Gold would stay nearby.
The closer I walked to Mother, the more I cried. Part of me didn't want to leave her. Mother's arms opened wide. I ran into them. Mother hugged me as if I were a baby. Her feelings were sincere. Mother let go, took my hand, and led me to her car. I felt no fear. At the station wagon, Mother loaded me up with new clothes and lots of toys. I was astounded. My mouth hung open as Mother continued to fill my arms. My voice cracked as I said goodbye to my brothers, who shook their heads in response. I felt like a traitor, and I thought they hated me for exposing the family secret. "I'm going to miss you," Mother cried. Before I could think, I replied, "I'll miss you, too." As happy as I was for the judge's decision, I became filled with sadness. I felt torn between my freedom and being separated from Mother and the family. Everything was too good to be true, my freedom, the new clothes, the toys. But the thing I cherished most was the warmth of Mother's hug. "I'm so sorry about everything," I sobbed. "I really am. I didn't mean to tell." "It's not your—" Mother began. Her eyes changed. "It's all right." Mother's voice became firm. "Now listen to me. You have another chance. This is a new beginning for you. I want you to be a good boy." "I will," I said as I wiped away my tears. "No," she stated in a cold voice. "I mean it. You have got to be a good boy, a better boy." I looked into her swollen eyes. I felt that Mother wanted the best for me. I realized that before Mother went into the courtroom, she had already predicted the outcome. "I'll be good. I'll try real hard," I said as I squared my shoulders like I did back in the basement years ago. "I'll make you proud of me. I'll try my best to make you proud." "That's not important," Mother stated. Before she sent me away, she gave me a final hug. "Have a happy life." I turned away sniffling. I didn't look back. I thought about what Mother had last said. "Have a happy life." I felt as if she were giving me away. I almost collapsed when I reached Ms. Gold, who helped me load her car with my prized possessions. We stood together as Mother drove off. I waved to everyone, but only Mother returned my gesture. Her window was rolled up, but I watched Mother's lips as she repeated, "Have a happy life." "How about an ice cream?" Ms. Gold asked, breaking the tension. I stood up straight and smiled, "Yes, ma'am." Pam gently took my hand, wrapping her long fingers around mine, and led me to the cafeteria. We strolled past the other cars and a few scattered trees. I caught a whiff of the tree's scent. Then I stopped to gaze at the sun. I stood still for a moment, taking in my surroundings. A soft wind blew through my hair. I didn't shiver. The grass was a bright yellow-green. I knew that my world was different now. Ms. Gold stopped to look at the sun, too. "David, are you going to be all right?" "Yes," I smiled. "I just don't want to forget this first day of the rest of my life." Chapter 4 New Beginnings. After the effects of the trial had worn off, my insides became numb. I fully realized that Mother couldn't physically harm me, but I still felt an eerie sensation that told me Mother was somewhere out there, coiled like a rattlesnake, waiting to reach out and strike with a vengeance. But another part of me felt that I would never see Mother or my brothers again. I became confused, sensing that I didn't deserve to live with them, that I was unworthy, and that Mother had thrown me away. I tried my best to tell myself that through the wonder of the county's social services and the court system, I had a new lease on my life. I tried my best to isolate my past, to bury my dark experiences deep inside my heart. Like a light switch, I imagined myself flicking off my entire past. I quickly became accustomed to the routine at Aunt Mary's home, as well as to my new school. Even though I was spontaneous and free at Aunt Mary's, I still became lifeless and shy around my classmates. It seemed difficult for me to make friends. I stood out, especially whenever children asked why I didn't live with my parents. And whenever some of my classmates persisted, I stuttered and turned away. I couldn't look into their eyes. Other times I'd happily state, "I'm a foster child." I was proud to be a member of my new family. I began to repeat this saying until one day one of the older foster children pulled me aside at school, warning me not to tell anyone what I was because a lot of folks don't like our kind. "Our kind? What are you talking about?" I asked. "We didn't do anything wrong." "Don't worry, little brother. You'll find out soon enough. Just be cool and keep your mouth shut." I obeyed the command, realizing I now lived in another world of prejudice. During recess, I watched the other kids laugh as they played tag and handball, while I kept to myself and wandered around the school in a daze. No matter how hard I tried, my mind kept flashing back to my other school in Daly City. I thought of Mr. Ziegler and his animated happy-faced sons, which he would draw on my papers, Mrs. Woodworth's dreaded spelling tests, or running to the library where Ms. Howe played Octopus's Garden by the Beatles on her record player. In my new school, I had completely lost interest. I no longer absorbed my subjects as I had just a few weeks ago. I sat behind the gray steel desk half-dazed, scribbling on my papers, counting down the minutes until the end of the school day. What was once my sanctuary soon became a prison that kept me from my playtime at my foster home. As my attention span drifted, my handwriting, once cursive and graceful, became chicken scratch. At Aunt Mary's, my awkward sense of humor and naive excitability made me popular with the older foster children. Whenever some of them were granted permission to leave Mary's home for the afternoon, I was allowed to tag along. Sometimes they stole candy bars from the local grocery stores. Wanting total acceptance, and having already stolen food for years, I immediately followed their lead. If someone stole 2 candy bars, I stole 4. It seemed so easy to me that after a few afternoon trips, I became a legend within the group. I was fully aware that what I was doing was wrong. I also knew that some of the bigger boys were using me, but I didn't care. After years of isolation, I was finally accepted within a group. My stealing was done within the foster home as well. Waiting until everyone was outside, I'd sneak into the kitchen and take slices of bread and stash them under my pillow. Then, late at night, I'd sit up on my bed and nibble on my prize, like a mouse nibbling on a piece of cheese. One Sunday afternoon, I grew tired of bread and decided to steal cupcakes from the freezer. In the early morning hours, I awoke to find an army of ants leading to the head of my bed. As quickly and quietly as I could, I tiptoed to the bathroom and flushed my goodies along with the ants down the toilet. The next day, as Aunt Mary prepared our lunches for school, she discovered the missing desserts and blamed Teresa, one of the other foster children. Even though Teresa was severely scolded and grounded to her room after school that day, I remained silent. I didn't steal from Aunt Mary's home for the thrill of it, but only to have a ready-made storage of food in case I ever became hungry. It didn't take long for Aunt Mary to discover that I was the one responsible for the missing food. From that moment on, Aunt Mary eyed me carefully around her home and did her best to restrict my afternoon adventures. At first, I felt ashamed because I had betrayed her trust and kindness. But on the other hand, I simply didn't care what old maid Aunt Mary thought of me. My only concern was total acceptance by the older foster children. My welcome at Aunt Mary's was probably worn out even before the first week of July, when I was placed in my first permanent foster home. Just as before, when the police officer had driven me to Aunt Mary's for the first time, I couldn't wait to see the new home. My new foster mother, Lillian Catanza, greeted Ms. Gold and me at the door. As I followed Mrs. Catanza and Ms. Gold up the wide, open stairs that led into the living room, I tightly clutched a brown grocery bag containing all my worldly possessions. The night before, I made sure to pack my bag and keep it close to my side. I knew from experience that if I left anything behind, I would never see it again. I was shocked when I first witnessed the foster children who transformed into frenzied piranhas whenever a child left Aunt Mary's home. Within seconds of the child's departure, the others would swarm through the room, checking under the bed, in the closets, and through the clothes hamper, everywhere, searching for clothes, toys, or other valuables. The ultimate prize was to find a stash of money. I quickly discovered that it didn't matter whether the thieves needed or even desired the items. Possession of an article